Singapore Grand Prix is go. Good launch off the line by the P3 man. Charles Leclerc is trying to take second place. Carlos Sainz holds the lead. Charles Leclerc does take second place. And Lewis Hamilton is all over the road. He had got past Lando Norris, but he rejoins. Does Norris get back ahead of him? That's the question. No, Hamilton takes that third place on the road. Does he give the position to his teammate? The two Mercedes side by side. It's a Ferrari 1-2 at Marina Bay. George Russell will warm that place back. Hamilton was all over the road as the Spartans fly as they make their way down to turn number 5. Does Hamilton give the position back? Can he keep him behind? There's a late lunge by Nico Hülkenberg to the inside. It's a Ferrari 1-2 out front, David.
Yeah, but Hamilton's going to have to give that place back. He's gained an advantage.
So you're going to let me back pass, or...
They've swapped back the Mercedes. George Russell's gone through and up to third position, so they've been on the radio, and there is the switch. Lando Norris now in fourth place, and Hamilton back to where he started the race in P5. Further back in the pack, we're on board with Oscar Piastri, and that is the contact that has cost the AlphaTauri there, and we did see Yuki Tsunoda a few moments later become our first retirement from the Grand Prix.
Yeah, Perez just Perez, honestly.
Logan Sargeant off the road, and the American driver who is fighting for a contract to next year hits the wall, and then a major intervention, DC, a full safety car deployed. Well, into the pits we come. This is a moment that could change the race. And is there a opportunity? First of all, in comes Carlos Sainz. Was the second Ferrari in as well in the background? Yes, he
driving
was.
Driving slowly. Yeah, you can see he hung back there, forcing the Mercedes to have to drive slowly as well. So this could benefit the McLaren, actually.
Okay, so everyone is making their way in. And did Sainz get out ahead of Max Verstappen there?
Verstappen didn't manage to take the lead, so all of that strategy has gone out of the window for Max. He didn't pit, he still has to, and he doesn't have clear air. That's huge.
This is Alonso coming into the pits.
Look at the damage. Has he got some
and
damage?
He's gone over. That'll be 5 seconds. This is Charles Leclerc's slow stop for Ferrari.
What happened there?
We had to hold you for traffic.
Yeah, Hamilton crawled into his box because he couldn't get in because Russell was there.
And it's Sainz, Verstappen, Russell, then Perez and Norris. Verstappen and Perez are expected to be a lot slower in this initial phase than the cars around them. Good run now for George Russell. Russell's all over the road. Is he going to nose to the inside? Brilliant pitches of two overtakes at the same time. Russell gets past Verstappen. And also going through is Lando Norris. Lewis Hamilton was very close to Perez. And he's not able to get by. But Russell is up to second. Norris is up to fourth. There is Lando Norris taking the position away from Max Verstappen and improving to the podium places. It's Sainz, then Russell, then Norris as Max Verstappen drops to fourth.
Lewis Hamilton comes and Verstappen puts up no defence. He has resigned himself.
Goes Lewis Hamilton and he takes fourth position. Verstappen knows that it's about extending the stint now. Fernando Alonso to the inside of Sergio Perez and taking the position away. There's still a little bit of traction left for Perez. Three into one corner, will not go. Round the outside goes Esteban Ocon, side by side with Fernando Alonso, who's wide at this part of the circuit, and somehow they're in the same order that they left. Oh no, they're not, because here comes the Alpine. Better traction, and that will be the position. Fernando Alonso refuses to give it up, but he'll have to, and Ocon moves up to eighth. A record-breaking run of 10 Grand Prix victories in a row, and you have to celebrate it when you're in the form like that, because things can easily change in Formula One. It is Ferrari, then Mercedes, then McLaren out front, and Max Verstappen is down in 15th position. Great drive will go unrewarded for Esteban Ocon, who is pulling off some fine moves there, and he will park up, he's out.
No!
He hit the curb coming out of the last corner, and then it's like he's in sixth gear, but he's not driving. So is that clutch?
And the Mercedes drivers have elected to give up track position at a street circuit and to make moves to try and fight for victory in Singapore. The virtual safety car is ending. Oh, it's a slow stop for Aston Martin at the back of the car. The rear jack that was redesigned for the new aerodynamic part at the rear of that car, and the car slipping off the jack as a result. Fighting Joe Grosjean, who started from the pit lane, the team that is currently Alfa Romeo. There will be Sauber, late end from the world champion, and Max Verstappen fights his way back to the points. And George Russell is close now. Ah, he's got an opportunity. This is his first real run on the Ferrari driver ahead. Go to the outside line, says Charles Leclerc. But then it's the up and under attempt from George Russell. This is the traction race we were telling you about. George Russell's got a chance now to win this Grand Prix because he's fought his way by and he's taken third place. And Lewis Hamilton is the second Mercedes on the charge. Lewis Hamilton fights a way by. And the team are fighting their way by to the front of the field now. Third and fourth for Mercedes.
Gasly can't turn the car. Now we'll get DRS, and this should be a relative drive-by to the outside. Switch back.
Let's see if he can get by. Gasly will try and hang on to it, but Verstappen's got the better grip. He's got the place, and at turn 14, he is up to sixth.
Lando 0.8 behind, 0.8 with DRS. Russell, no DRS.
It's on purpose.
Copy that.
George Russell was able to set up the move before. He's really close this time. Russell having the defensive shake thrown. But now there's an opportunity to stand on the power. The two British drivers go wheel to wheel. George Russell trying to fight his way by. Will that be the inside line? No, Norris gets his elbows out. And that could have won the race for Carlos Sainz. Russell knows he needs to try and make the place right now. Hamilton was giving his teammate the hurry up, but Sainz's tactical awareness may well have won him this Grand Prix on the 62nd and last lap. He's got a great advantage now. The charging Mercedes might be denied, but look at the top four on this last lap, nearly glued together.
Yeah, they're still fighting on, but there's only one more DRS zone left. And Russell, if he wants to win, needs to make two positions. So has Sainz now done enough? Can he get away from Norris? That's the next question. Lando's still pushing for the win.
Off,
Russell's off.
George Russell into the wall and out of the race. The British driver who is charging for victory is out on the last lap. And he's in the Tech Pro.
On board, final lap. And you see Norris there with the right rear and Russell with the right front. He did take out quite a bite of that wall with the right rear. Opens up that corner and the wall just juts out slightly. And that was George.
George Russell, who is dreaming of a second career victory, but he's heading to this man instead. Formula One at its absolute finest. Carlos Sainz, tactical brilliance. Carlos Sainz, the winner of the Singapore Grand Prix. Lando Norris in second place, and a charging drive from Lewis Hamilton puts him on the podium once again in Formula One. And it's side by side across the line. Leclerc hung on by 0.2 seconds. Ferrari's first victory since Austria last year. Red Bull's perfect season ends at Grand Prix 15.
This is the Outlap F1 podcast featuring America's own John, James, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. Welcome into season 5. This is going to be episode number 30 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We are proud members of the Ship It Studios podcast network, and this is the 2023 Singapore Grand Prix race review. You've got Andy, and I'm along with my now Iron Man streak is continuing co-host, Mr. Cody. It is good to see you, sir. We're actually recording this on time tonight. So we watched the race earlier this morning, and how you doing? And boy, what a show we got to get into.
Yeah, doing great. Loved the race today. We're gonna get all into that. Had a nice afternoon nap to get over the fact that the race was at 7 a.m. I got a little bit of stuff done around the house, so life is good.
Yeah, definitely. A very fun show this morning. On track, and we will do our best to try to recap it all in just a little bit. So if you found us, welcome. Welcome along, as Mr. Croft likes to say. You can find us, as always, on Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube. At Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. Please see our link tree in our show notes if you'd like to find different ways that you can find us. If you happen to be watching this on YouTube and you like and hear, or you like what you see and you enjoy what you're hearing, click the like and or the subscribe button, and it will just help us come up a little bit better in searches and help us get our content to you that much quicker. If you happen to be on your favorite podcasting app, and again, you like what you're hearing, go ahead and click the 5-star button on that. That will, again, help us a little bit better to come up in searches and get our content to you that much better. You can email the show, chatnow@outlapf1.com. We'll take you there. You can peruse the website, www.outlapf1.com, to go there. As just a general thank you to all of our monetary supporters, including Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quinton Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of what we call that #OutlapF1Nation, you can see our link tree in our show notes. It's our anchor page, $1, $5, all goes into making the show better. It just helps to purchase some new equipment, upgrade the equipment we already have, and push the show forward. You can always check out the good folks at Manscaped, and you can take advantage of our code OUTLAP. That's OUTLAP, all one word. You'll get 20% off and free shipping if you use that code at checkout. So go ahead and check that out. And our buddy Vincenzo Landino, boy, was he a happy guy this morning. I saw some very interesting and cute videos of him with his little his first son. You can check out his our buddy and his shirt line, the F1guy.com. It is F1 quality merch at not necessarily the F1 quality price. He's a big Ferrari guy, so as we're about to tell you, he was a happy camper this morning. Let's put it that way. All right, we will keep you in the dark no longer. Cody, what's your headline of the day?
My headline is, what a weird, wacky, wonderful one-off. I am sure we're going to be back to our regularly scheduled programming next week of Red Bull domination. However, for this one little glimmer of hope in the 2023 F1 season, we had someone other than a Red Bull win the race. And oh, was it glorious, at least for the last 20 laps.
All right. Yeah, very good. So my headline of the day is, it's the Singapore Grand Prix that slays the dragon. Oh, wait, that might be more appropriate for next weekend. It slayed Godzilla. Oh, wait, that might still be more appropriate for next weekend. Or it's the curse of the Godzilla lizard. Yes, let's go with that. Let's go with that. That's what we're going to go with. The Singapore Grand Prix turns out to be Max Verstappen's and Red Bull's undoing. The streaks that are over, the consecutive win streak for Max Verstappen goes by the board. The consecutive Grand Prix streak for Red Bull goes by the board. The 23 for 23 talk that we were getting in this ridiculous environment closer and closer and closer to maybe having a reality, that goes by the board. So the streak breaker is the Singapore GP. It turns out to be the bogey track that we you know, I'd said maybe earlier in the season, this one might be. I didn't really believe that at the time. But then they turned up in practice, and they looked off, and then they turned up in qualifying, and they looked even more off. And even though they had some pretty decent race pace at the end of that GP, and look, as bad as a weekend as it's been, Max still comes home in P5.
Yeah.
So as bad as it looked, as much as you want to, you know, jump on that a little bit, it really wasn't that bad, other than it wasn't up to the standard of what we saw all year round. Wow. And we're going to get into those last few laps. A lot of drama, a lot of what I like to call 200-mile-an-hour chess going on, some gambits being played by some certain drivers, and some really, really weird moves made by some others during the course of the weekend. All right. So we will get into it. And we'll start with our qualifying recap. Going out in P20, this driver did not participate in Sunday's race due to the crash that he suffered in Q2. That, or in Q1, rather. That would be the number 18 of Lance Stroll, and we wish him all the best on his recovery. P19 was Zhao Guanyu. P18 was Logan Sargeant. P17, getting caught out by that exact wreck of Lance Stroll, was Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. P16, Valtteri Bottas fails to advance in the other Alfa Romeo. P15 saw Yuki Tsunoda. He did not actually set a Q2 lap time. We'll talk about why in just a little bit. P14 was Alex Albon. P13 was Sergio Perez. Hello, Red Bull not in the top 10. P12, Pierre Gasly in the Alpine, and P11, also not making Q3 for the first time all season. Max Verstappen in the other Red Bull. Yes, I read that correctly. Advancing through to the Q3 shootout and from 10 to 1 in P10 was Liam Lawson, who knocked out Max Verstappen at the end of Q2. P9, Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas. P8, Esteban Ocon in the Alpine. P7 was at Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin. P6, probably the star of qualifying, if you ask me, other than maybe the guy who took the pole, Kevin Magnussen in the Haas. P5, Lewis Hamilton in the Mercedes. P4 was Lando Norris in the now heavily capered upgrade McLaren Mercedes. P3 was Charles Leclerc. P2 was George Russell, who was on it for most of the weekend. And in P1, with a lap time of 1 minute 30. That's right, I said 1 minute 30.984. Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari. The pace was real. Wow, what an interesting qualifying session we had. It kind of reminds you a bit of Monaco, where everybody kind of builds up to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Ferrari shining through. Came out early out of the gangbusters Friday and made it stick on Saturday.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of big stories to get into here in qualifying. I think the biggest ones would be, we can probably start with Lance Stroll's crash. So that one was a doozy. He came out of one of the final turns there, coming across to the start line and lost the car going over the curb and nailed the wall with some significant force. That car was destroyed. And obviously Lance Stroll had enough of a shakeup to not participate in Sunday's race.
Yeah, you have to wonder if that's almost a combination of one. I'm sure he felt it. I totally believe that that is a real and legit excuse, because if you saw that crash, there's no doubt in my mind that that was a nasty one. But, you know, fortunately, all the safety equipment works as was intended, and he walks away. That being said, the car, the chassis, was not in very good shape. It was going to be a huge rebuild, and I'm sure it was a huge relief to the team when Lance kind of comes in and says, hey, look, I'm not feeling it. Let's, you know, what were we possibly going to get out of this race anyway, running at the back? This is the most physically demanding track of the year. If you're not 100% going into it, it's marginal if you get out of it anyway. So after a crash like that, again, I totally see why Lance Stroll would want to sit this one out.
I had a tiny voice in my head saying, I wonder if they could get Sebastian Vettel on an overnight to Singapore for a one race contract. I mean, Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso, same team, decently competitive car, inject that straight into my veins. I would love that. Obviously it wouldn't work with not having any practice or qualifying, start from the pit lane. It wouldn't be worth it, but it was nice to think about.
Well, yeah, I mean, technically, once qualifying starts, they can't.
Oh, really?
You can only change the driver because now you're in Parc Fermé. Okay. So once Stroll comes out, believe it or not, the car is actually, that's when you're actually officially entered into the race, is when the car breaks the safety car line and comes out. And actually, you know, when you watch all that weird stuff about the timing, how it like cycles through and everybody's, that's actually, there's a process going on behind the scenes. Those are the cars actually being formally entered into the race and the cars being put into Parc Fermé conditions. So once that happens, he was either going to be Lance Stroll or nobody at that point. Had it happened on Friday, you might have been able to see Felipe Drugovic or any number of whatever, you know, if they had contracts with other reserves out there, may have been able to come and fill in. You know, you've seen that happen with people that get hurt on a Friday, like Nico Hülkenberg has come in famously a few times on a Saturday morning, cold, few laps and free practice three, and then goes out and tries to qualify the car. We've seen that happen before. But that's an incident that happens on a Friday. This is a Saturday incident. It happened right in the middle of qualifying after he had already come out. So There was no choice in the matter for Aston Martin there. And that, unfortunately, you know, I mentioned it earlier, that catches out Oscar Piastri and the McLaren. So that was a bit of a surprising result. You did not expect McLaren to be out in Q1. Mm-hmm. Again, the big story, no Red Bulls in Q3. I think you had to go back to the 2019 Russian Grand Prix. Don't at me if I don't quite get that right. I know they mentioned it in the broadcast at some point, but it's been a while since we've seen at least one since both Red Bulls out of Q3. Just unable, it seems, to fire up the tires. They brought a special floor for this track. They ended up taking it off. It seemed like whatever they threw at the car on this particular track in these particular conditions just did not work.
Yeah, they were nowhere pretty much all weekend. And Max Verstappen comes around to set that, you know, his last time in Q2. And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, well, sure, he's gonna squeak on through. And then he's sitting there on 10th, and I'm like, oh my God, it's not gonna happen. It might not happen. And drivers are coming across the line, and finally, you know, the hero of the day to a lot of people, Liam Lawson, of all people, is the one to just eke out the time and knock Max Verstappen out of Q3, which was pretty amazing. Very happy for Liam Lawson to get into Q3 and, you know, was able to translate that into the race, which we'll get into. But my jaw dropped, and I pretty much sent you a meme that matched that. It was.
Oh, I mean, I was tweeting the shocked cat meme and all sorts of stuff. You know, it was just one of those, like, I think there was a lap earlier in the Q2 session, and the track evolution was rampant. Yeah. It was amazing how quickly the track evolved throughout the sessions, where, like, there was all of a sudden Max is like at the top of the board, and I'm like, oh, well, okay. You know, now we're back to, you know, it was fun on Friday to see them be a little bit hot under the collar, but, you know, they're just going to go and kind of do their thing. And then he's falling. Then he's 10th, and he tries to set that other lap, and he does not improve. And you could see the car wiggling if you were looking at some of the onboard shots that the broadcast showed. And then, you know, I'm like, he doesn't have it. Whatever it is, he doesn't have it. And the irony of the junior team, of the guy who was not in anybody's plans at that junior team, apparently at the start of the season, to come in and be the guy that knocks him out. Maybe some people would call that poetic justice. But the Red Bull being down there leads to opportunities for some others. Impressive showing from the two Haas guys. I love Martin Brundle's comment that said, September the 16th, the day Kevin Magnussen remembered how to qualify his car again. Because that's kind of what it was. I mean, I think my observation was, okay, now we understand where the Haas works. Hot, humid, slow-speed corners. Yep, got it.
There was a nice little story for Liam Lawson, too, saying that he loved the Singapore track when he used to play, video games and racing sims as a kid, and that he always wanted his dad to take him to the race, and they never got around to it. So he brought his dad to this race and put on a great show for him. So a little heartwarming there. I guess the next thing we got to get into while we're talking about how poorly Red Bull performed, though, is Max Verstappen seemed to be all over the place with infringements during qualifying. And I know that's got you pretty riled up, so I'll let you explain that one.
Part of this I'm going to save for awards, because there's a particular award and what they kind of did. And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in the stewards room to hear the Red Bull compelling arguments, because there wasn't not one investigation, not two investigations. There were three separate investigations for impeding, one of which I agreed probably merited no action. The one at the end of the pit lane annoyed a couple drivers for a couple of seconds and nothing really came of it. The two on-track ones where he's definitely in the way of Logan Sargeant. And look, I know Logan Sargeant's struggling, but, you know, the guy should have an opportunity to complete a clean lap. And the one where he impedes Tsunoda was pretty open and shut. And for, you know, I'm not a Red Bull conspiracy theorist guy, but when that one shows up and you read the decision and they say, yeah, he was at fault, but we're just going to let him off with a reprimand, that's fishy. And then you read the line that says, the representative of car number 22, who's Yuki Tsunoda, failed to appear for the meeting. That is ridiculously fishy, and there's no reason why that had to happen. I don't like it. I don't like the way that it looked. It just feeds into what, you know, a certain sector of fandom likes to... It was fodder. It was just pure fodder for that group of fans to eat it up. And they did. And in this case, I'm with them. One of those three ought to have been some sort of an infringement. It should have been at least a three-place grid penalty. Other drivers have gotten the same crap for doing that before. And the second the race director decided to throw out the minimum lap time, which actually worked well in Monza, why they didn't have that here, beyond me.
Yeah, I was at the end of that qualifying, seeing how Verstappen had three infractions, and they showed, and they even said it on the broadcast, that the impeding Tsunoda was a no-brainer penalty. It was clear as day. He was right on the racing line when Tsunoda was coming by on his flying lap, and he got in 11th, and I'm like, okay, I'll check back in a couple of hours and see where he ends up placing. I thought he was going to be starting like way, way far back and maybe even starting from the pit lane because, you know, if he got several place grid penalties and he's already qualified 11th, at that point you throw some new parts in the car and start from the pit lane and hope that, you know, some fresh power unit components give you an advantage. But, you know, a couple hours go by and I check and it says starting grid, he's still in 11th. And I'm like, that's really weird. Maybe they're just taking a really long time to sort this out because, you know, the FIA does that sometimes. And then that night I check and he still says he's starting 11th. And I had to double check several sources. I checked that website, I checked Reddit, checked this and that. And it was, yeah, everywhere it said, yeah, he finally found, you know, a post on Reddit talking about the results of those meetings. And yeah, it seemed really weird because they just pretty much gave him a slap on the wrist and a small fine out of the whole thing. And you think, man, like three infringements, one of them is a gimme. Like, how did he get out of that without any sort of penalty? Like you said, it definitely gives some fuel to the fire for that crowd that thinks that Verstappen is getting preferential treatment. I don't really see that. I think he just probably argued a really good case. And if Tsunoda wasn't there to argue his side of things, honestly, they could have probably just looked at the cameras and that would have said everything they needed to say. But yeah, I guess somehow I got out of that. Not sure how much of a difference it made in the end, but I thought he completely deserved at least a grid penalty on one of those.
Well, and that's the thing, and we're going to get into this when we get to awards. I have some parallels to another game, and another, you know, I'm going to have some cross references about it because there's no need in that moment for what this penalty would have been to play the games that Red Bull were playing, and instead they and you and Rachel Fleming called it right then and there. If he gets a penalty, yeah, starting from the pit lane, you throw all these new fresh engine components in. Oh, look what's next weekend, the Japanese Grand Prix. He's still technically in a Honda. Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? So just that's what you would do in that situation. And it's not like there's anybody challenging him for the Drivers' Championship. The only significance of this, the real significance of all of what we're about to talk about in the race is the Drivers' Championship will not be decided in Japan. That's it. It's still going to go the way that we all want it, and the Constructors are still going to go that same way. So, yeah, I've got some stuff for Red Bull when we get to awards about the game they are playing. But before we leave qualifying, I do have to shout out both Ferrari drivers in a year that... Look, we've at some point, several times, have tried to write these guys off. Couldn't understand why the car wasn't faster. This is two weekends in a row on two very different tracks. Like, they came out on Friday, and Ted Kravitz, you know, I love Ted Kravitz. He's one of my favorite characters in Formula One. Literally says at the beginning of the qualifying, we don't believe Ferrari have this. Nobody in the paddock believes Ferrari has this. Well, guess what? They did. And they had the pace and they figured out whatever the sweet setup was here. They nailed that thing, and good on them for it. All right. So we will leave the qualifying there. All right. So we will now flip the page, drop our go lights out, get into the race itself. There were a number of people who did not finish this race and will be included in our back markers. So starting off, again, not classified, was Yuki Tsunoda in the AlphaTauri, Esteban Ocon in the Alpine, whose engine failure, or however the reason was that he had to stop, created the virtual safety car that basically shifted the race into high gear. Valtteri Bottas in the Alfa Romeo, several offs, but unable to continue. And George Russell, the guy you have to, if you have a soul, you have to feel a little bit for this guy. I sometimes criticize teams for not being racy and going all out when the opportunity presented itself. This guy went and did that. This guy gets the Andy Award for balls out to the walls, literally. and look where it got him. So this is why I'm not a race strategist. Not classified. He does not finish. Actually, he is classified because on the last lap in P16, heartbreak for him. P15 was Fernando Alonso, who was just happy that his very, very bad day that just kept getting worse and worse the longer it went on is over. P14 was Logan Sargeant, and P13 was Nico Hülkenberg in the Haas. Wow. So let's talk Ocon first, because it was his incident that kicked off, and then we'll probably talk about Russell. So what was your thought on when you saw Ocon stop? One, do you agree with a virtual safety car there, or did you think it could should have been a full safety car, given the nature of that track?
It's tough to say, because I feel like the difference between a virtual safety car and a full safety car, as far as what you call it, can occasionally be splitting hairs. You know, sometimes it's obvious and you know it's going to be a full safety car if, like, a car has, you know, like what happened with Stroll, where you nail the wall full force, there's debris everywhere, the chassis is right out in the middle of the track. I mean, at that point, you know, you're thinking even maybe red flag. For this one, I could see it, you know, I could agree that it was okay being a virtual safety car, because he parked up on the side of the track. It's not like he ran into anything, so there's no debris out on the track. He's parked up right along the side. You know, I don't think he was particularly far away from a spot where they could take it off the track. So given all that, I think virtual safety car was probably fine. It did look a little bizarre, considering they had the full safety car earlier on, which I'm not really sure that I agreed with that one. But again, it's kind of splitting hairs sometimes, because in that incident, there was actual debris out on the track, possibly quite a bit of it. And you don't know how many marshals are going to have to go out on the track to clean that up and how long it's going to take. So I guess in this instance, I was fine with it being a virtual safety car. I felt pretty bad for Ocon, considering he was pulling off some pretty sweet moves, which he seems to do every once in a while. He gets some really awesome passes. But that Alpine awful reliability that we've seen this year just struck again, hit a curb and knocked something out because it sounded like his gears wouldn't engage, or, you know, they were saying maybe bad clutch on the broadcast. And so a very disappointing end to the day for him.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like Alpine was kind of set for, you know, going to be a pretty decent day. You know, they had, you know, the first safety car basically brought the whole field in, but for Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez, and put everybody basically on the hard compound tire. So, you know, there was a massive tire disadvantage for the Red Bulls. They were dropping back. They finally gave it up about maybe three or four laps before this happened. Had they been able to maybe put it out and maybe pit under the VSC, maybe their result is a little bit different, but that's just kind of how it went. The brakes were not going their way at all this weekend. Let's you know, call it like we see it. So yeah, you know, you're right. I think you do kind of have to feel for Ocon there. You know, kind of a tough break. He had probably, like I said, had a better day on offer, but that provided opportunity, because the top four or five cars had really kind of finally had kind of broken away. The early part of the race saw not a huge field spread. So everybody was kind of shadow boxing with each other, waiting. Safety car happens, that throws everybody into the pits. And again, now we're back to, again, are we going to do a second stop? Are we waiting? Are we just running to the end? What are we doing? You know, not anybody really pushing a lot of pace until the Ocon virtual safety car, which enabled Mercedes, who had had an extra set of medium tires for both drivers, to come in, put those new mediums on. Yeah, they gave up about maybe 15 seconds of actual distance, but they made that stuff up in a hurry because they were lapping. When that thing went back to green, it was almost a second and a half to 2 seconds on average. So they come storming back up. Both Mercedes get past Leclerc, and now we're on to the duo of Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris, who are occupying P1 and P2 respectively. Russell gets there, and on the last lap, apparently right after Lando hits the same patch with his car, touching the wall, George Russell hits the same patch in not the same nice sweet spot where the car can just bounce off of it, and wrecks it on the last lap in kind of spectacular, I almost saw some memes saying, almost in Mario Kart-esque fashion, causing him to lose his podium when he was probably the hardest charger of the day. You have to feel for George. He was very upset on the radio, basically called himself a rookie. You know, we've seen this guy beat himself up more than a few times. You know, I can think of the race at Williams where he kind of wrecked himself, the race in the Bahrain Outer Circuit where he should have and could have easily won that, and they, you know, bad pit stop and a couple bad pieces of luck threw that away too. He was very hard on himself. So you almost wanted to put your hand on his shoulder and go, "It's okay, buddy. There'll be other opportunities."
Yeah, it felt terrible for George on that one. And, you know, it was his own mistake. You know, he owns that one and he knows that, but it feels terrible because at worst he had P4. It would have been a great result. At worst, you know, could have still had that P3 podium. It didn't look like it was going to be really easy to pass there at the end, but you have that shot where they're looking at the turn and you got Sainz and Norris coming around and you just see Russell go straight off in the background. I was like, but yeah.
I saw it from Lando's onboard. And all of a sudden you just see this wave of spark in the background and you're like, holy, I literally said, holy shit, what happened there? And then you watch him just plummet down on the timing screen. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a millimeter difference, and that is a completely different result. It was amazing how, compared to how quickly they dispatched Leclerc, who was still on the hard tires, versus how they couldn't dispatch, despite the best efforts of both Mercedes drivers, Norris and Sainz, and then the way that Sainz was playing it by doing the gambit of, I'm going to come back and put Lando Norris into the DRS, so it makes it that much harder for George Russell or Lewis Hamilton to pass Lando, was, to me, next level. I don't ever recall seeing that with that type of use of DRS. The last time I saw anything like that was when Max did the weird thing in Jeddah with Lewis, you know, trying to time it when he gave the position back so he could jump him in the next DRS. I've never seen anybody try to use it to help a rival, an opponent, catch up but not be able to pass. It's just a perfect storm of weird circumstances, but next level calculation by Carlos Sainz. Yeah. And for all the Ferrari blunders that we've given them, look at what happened here.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little more when we get to the podium, but that little bit of strategic genius was enough to make the Mercedes have to push just a little too hard. And George just right after Lando hit the wall, George just hit it a little bit worse and in the front, which was enough to do him in.
Yeah. So, yeah, Russell ends up in P16. All right. So we will leave the backmarkers there. I guess frustrating day overall for Logan Sargeant, even though it's a P14. It's probably a little bit better for him, but he seemed way kind of off the pace. And it looks like the heat on that seat continues to get warmer and warmer. But anyway, moving into the midfield, P12 saw Zhao Granyu. P11 was Alex Albon. P10, points for the Haas boys. Kevin Magnussen brings it home in P10. P9, the other star kind of the weekend, Liam Lawson, the AlphaTauri, takes the qualifying pace and turns it into his first championship points on only his third race. I think this guy's got some talent. What do you think? P8, Sergio Perez. I think he's happy to be out of Singapore. P7, mover of the day, started back in P17 and just kind of got there. I don't really know how else to say it. Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. P6 was Pierre Gasly in the Alpine. So Alpine salvaging something out of the day. P5, the rally falls four positions short. Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. And P4, as we mentioned, Charles Leclerc, who probably played the ultimate team gunner game that I haven't seen. They talk about again, chess at 200 miles an hour. Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. Lots to talk about, I think, in the midfield. But Cody, I'll let you have at it. Where do you want to start?
There's a lot of good stories here in the midfield. I think we can start with Charles Leclerc, who from very early in the race, Ferrari decided that they were going to put their eggs in the Carlos Sainz basket, and Charles Leclerc was going to be the sacrificial lamb to get him there, because pretty much right out of the gate, they were saying, hey, we need you to hang back about, 3 seconds back from Sainz, just, so that you don't use up your tires, but, mostly so you can hold up everyone else. And then a little bit later on, they upped that. They're like, yeah, we're going to need you to hang back 5 seconds. And I don't think he ever actually hung back that far. He seemed to be kind of going against the orders there a little bit. But very clear from early in the race that they were going to be using Carlos Sainz as the lead driver in this race, which, he had pole. He had the lead off the line. I don't really blame them for it. They probably figured, just like a lot of other teams did, that this was their best shot to get what could be their only win of the season. And Ferrari wasn't going to mess around letting their drivers race each other in this one.
Yeah, the anti-Monza strategy, basically. And as revealed by Ted Kravitz in his notebook, Charles Leclerc's idea to go to the soft compound tires at the start, which ends up being the thing that kind of sparked that entire strategy and allowed it to work, because he's able to get into P2 off the line because he had the benefit of those soft tires and did enough management to make him last long enough to get to the safety car and then, put on the harder tire. Probably deserved a bit better fate. If not for the Mercedes, he probably makes the podium. He would have had a P1 and maybe a P3 finish if not for the Mercedes going off strategy and putting on those medium tires there. So, yeah, I mean, team game engaged. This is Ferrari we're talking about. What weird, strange, parallel universe have we crossed into? Here's my question. Is this the Fred Vasseur effect taking shape, where like they can do that and they accept it and deal with it? Or was this just good luck, or did they back themselves into it and somehow got lucky?
I think it's a weird one-off alternate universe for Ferrari this weekend, where Ferrari made decent strategic calls and they didn't eat up their tires immediately and were able to actually conserve them throughout their stints. I think I'll believe it more if we see less strategic blunders throughout the rest of the season. But this one they seem to have bang on. They had the tire calls right. They had the conservation of the tires right. They must have had a good setup for the car to get that all to work. They were, Carlos Sainz especially, and we'll get this into this more too, but their race pace, they were pretty much setting the rest of the field, which is exactly what you want to do in a race like this, where it's all about conserving your tires. they were really right on the whole weekend, right from practice. And so, you know, I don't know if you can really give all the credit to Fred Vasseur for that. I'm feeling, though, that he's having a positive effect on the team, at least, you know, lately. And I'm hoping that this will carry into the rest of the season and next season, where we see Ferrari kind of going back to maybe it's more clinical Michael Schumacher days. Fingers crossed.
They got a lot of ways to get before I think they get to that point. But this was two consecutive Grand Prix where I thought they, for the most part, handled themselves very, very well. And you just have to kind of, I sit back and I look and I go, well, what's different? What's changed? You know, driver confidence is a big thing. But they came out of the summer break. They had really a bad Zandvoort. Let's not, you know, make a light of it. That was a bad race for them. But they come back to Monza. They come back to their spiritual home. They put on a good show. They were leading a lot for that race. Yeah, they didn't end up winning it in the end. And yeah, the drivers got into it a little bit, but they didn't wreck each other. And now you have, and then you come here where all of a sudden on Friday, there they were, and they were really good. And there they were on Saturday, and they were really good. And here they are on Sunday. And it, you know, it carried through. Maybe this is the beginnings of a turning point. I don't know that we have enough data or enough of a sample size to really call this yet, but that's a team I'm looking at now for the rest of this season. It's color me interested with what's going on at Ferrari, both in front and behind the scenes. All right, so I guess that just leaves the podium. Actually, before we go on, I did want to talk one thing about the mover of the day, Oscar Piastri, who there was nothing spectacular about it. It was just this kind of methodical, I'm just keeping my pace, and everybody kind of drops off in front of me. He did make one really nice move on Max Verstappen when his tires were dead. Max does eventually repay the favor after the late pit stop there. But he just kind of still, you know, he gets three places off at the start. He got another two places in the safety car swap. The pit stop was good. And brings it home in P7 on the non-upgraded McLaren car. So now he gets the upgrades going into next week. So, again, as a McLaren fan, I am now excited to see the prospects of the two of them moving forward.
Yeah, I'm a Piastri believer. I think he is showing that he is not being held up by being a rookie at all. Definitely making you know, like the likes of Logan Sargeant look bad, and you know, Liam Lawson is now doing that too, where we don't really have to maybe believe in this myth where you get a free pass in your first season because you're a rookie and you can't, you know, you don't know enough yet to stack up to the competition. They're stacking up very well. Piastri is going to be very strong in this team. Good competition to Lando Norris, and he's proven it week in and week out. I mean, even though didn't get close to a podium or anything like that this weekend, he made up some serious ground over the course of that race and brought home some good points.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so we will now get into the podium finishers. P3 saw Lewis Hamilton. P2, one of my more stressful watches, saw Lando Norris come home in that position. And in P1, it is not a Red Bull. It is not Max Verstappen. It is Carlos Sainz, the smooth operator. Carlando, P1 and P2 respectively, coming home for Ferrari. Cody, I'll let you go first. What was your thought?
Carlos Sainz showed this race that he has what it takes to stack up as one of the best, because he managed this race pretty much to perfection. Set the pace from the front throughout the whole race to a point where no one was getting around him, but he was doing a great job of conserving the medium tires that he started the stint on. Managed to stay far enough ahead that during the first round of pit stops, which mostly came during that first safety car period, you know, Red Bull's strategy was that they were going to try to leapfrog everyone in front of them during the first round of pit stops, try to get out into clean air, make up enough ground that when they took their pit stops, that they would have made up some significant ground. that didn't end up working out for them because Max Verstappen only managed to come out of that safety car period in P2. Carlos Sainz had managed things to perfection to still come out in P1, and we saw really quickly that that was going to throw a wrench into the Red Bull strategy. I'm not sure that even if Max Verstappen had come out in P1 there, that they would have been home free. But those Red Bulls plummeted like a rock as soon as we got back to green flag racing. And through that whole next stint, Carlos Sainz hanging out in front, managing things very well. But perhaps the best bit of it is what you were talking about before, how at the closing stages of the race, when the Mercedes of Russell and Hamilton finally caught up, how he, in the last few laps, managed to keep Lando Norris in DRS just enough that it was giving him the extra speed he needed to stay in front of the Mercedes, which were the ultimate threat to Sainz's victory, but still stay far enough ahead of Norris that that DRS wasn't going to give him enough of an advantage to pass Sainz. And he did that for several laps and sounded like a badass on the radio too when his team came over the radio and said, "Hey, Lando's in DRS. He's about this far behind you." And Sainz is like, "Yeah, I know. It's on purpose."
Stop inventing.
So he played that masterfully. And I think that he completely deserved this win. He drove the entire race to perfection. And I was very impressed. I've said this on several of our episodes before, how I haven't ever really been a Sainz believer. I've always felt that he wasn't as strong as Leclerc at Ferrari, but especially over these last few races, he's proven me wrong. He is currently the stronger Ferrari driver.
Yeah, I mean, coming into form and coming into form at exactly the right time, you know, in order to kind of capitalize on the opportunities when they've come. The ultimate lap is three laps from the finish. And this was the lap where Russell gets right on the gearbox of Norris and makes a move right before the turn 17, 18, 19, right before they go to the main straight. And you know Russell's going to have DRS coming into it, but he tried to get past and, you know, I guess he hits a little bump and he just isn't able to clear Norris. And at that point, Sainz is like 1.2, 1.5 in front. And it almost felt like the only way I could describe it was like, oh my God, you don't want to be that out in front. And the only other time I've ever said that with respect to a race is in NASCAR when they're doing restrictor plate racing at the end of the race, where if you happen to get a run and you lead out, that train is a coming and it's just going to swallow you up. And that's what I thought was about to happen. I just went, well, P2 was fun. It's going to be P4 for Lando. And watch what happens when Russell reels in Sainz. And then Sainz deftly, astutely drops back just enough to make it like 0.8 of a second in the first sector. And slowed down just enough to let Lando get, because we mentioned this in the preview, there were three different DRS zones here. Could have been a fourth one with the reprofiling. I mean, there may be one next year. It'll be interesting to see if they do that. But just enough to where Lando could have it. And that is 200 miles. The racecraft in that moment is a masterclass. I don't know what else you call it. I really don't. It blew me away. I've never seen that. I've never seen it executed to where it worked. I've seen maybe people try it and then it blows up in their face. But no, this worked, and he it's fully deserved victory from it. The driver, clearly the best guy on that grid all weekend, Carlos Sainz. Smooth operator indeed. Wow. What a show. All right. We've said a lot. So we are going to take a break. We are going to pay a bill or two. We are going to reset, re-rack. We will come back. We will tell you where all this affects the standings. Then we'll open it up to your opinions on this amazing show, the fan email segment. We'll talk a little bit about awards. We'll talk about predictions. I think both of ours according to the very first practice session, our lap times went bye-bye.
So bad. I was like watching the first qualifying. I was like, is that a 4 or 3 that I put in the predictions? Oof. Yeah. Not good.
No, it was a 9. It's like, I think we just hit the wrong key on the buttons on the keypad, but you know, maybe that's the excuse. That's what we'll go with. But anyway, we'll recap all that. So come on back. We'll get into all that in just a little bit.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop.
All right, welcome back in. This is season 5, episode number 30 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We're part of the Ship It Studios podcast network, and we just got talking about probably the race of the year to date, 2023 Singapore Grand Prix. So we've just kind of taken our takes on what we saw today, and now we're going to check out where all the points fall out. Cody, your time to shine on the drivers, and I will handle the teams.
All right. Despite the fact that he finished in a lowly P5, that's not really going to change much to Max Verstappen's championship hopes, because he is still in first place, driving for Red Bull, way, way out in front still with 374 points. In second place, his teammate Sergio Perez, not quite out in front as far as Verstappen, but still with a pretty good gap to close on him. He is at 223 points. Lewis Hamilton picking up good points today with that third place. He is in third place in the points, driving for Mercedes with 180. While Fernando Alonso dropped back to fourth place, driving for Aston Martin with 170. Fifth place, making up the best points this weekend, Carlos Sainz for Ferrari with 142. And just behind him in sixth place, Charles Leclerc, his teammate, driving for Ferrari with 123. George Russell had a great opportunity to get great points this weekend. Unfortunately, it all went out the window at the very end. But he's still sitting in seventh place with a respectable 109 points. Lando Norris getting good points with the P2. He is catching up to George Russell, honestly. He's within a shout now. He has 97 points. Lance Stroll, despite not partaking in the weekend, still sits in ninth place with 47 points. And in 10th place, Pierre Gasly, now only 2 points behind Stroll, with 45, driving for Alpine.
Yeah, that P9, 10, 11, 12 is actually quite spicy amongst the drivers. I think there's only like maybe 3 or 4 points in it between all of them. So we may still see all of that change. Yeah, interesting. Lando comes up to only 12 points, shy of George Russell. If he can continue to score, and if Russell continues to have, you know, difficulty, or he crashes out of another couple of races, that position could flip. Didn't ever think we would ever say that at the beginning of the season. So, yeah, there you go. All right. With respect to the teams, it is still Red Bull Racing Powertrain, still kind of in a league of their own, 597 points. Here's the weird stat of the weekend. Yeah, Max only comes home in P5, but actually increases his championship lead over Sergio Perez,
because he outscores. Right.
Yes, he does. P2, Mercedes, they check in 289 points. P3, solidifying, I think that for them, at least right now, is Ferrari, 265 points. P4, Aston Martin, they remain on 217 points. P5, McLaren, Mercedes, they are up to 139 points. P6 is Alpine, they check in with 81 points. P7, Williams. No points today, but they remain on 21 points. P8, Haas Ferrari, they get a point today, so they move up to 12 points. P9, Alfa Romeo, they remain on 10 points. So big point for Haas there for P8. That's significant. And P10, AlphaTauri, because of Liam Lawson, scoring now up to 5 points on the year.
Mm-hmm. You know, I never thought it could happen, and I'm still not sure it could happen, but with McLaren's recent form and Aston Martin's drop in form, it makes you almost think that McLaren could take that fourth place in the constructors before the season's over.
They need, I think, three more outcomes just like this, where they're...
It could happen. There's enough races left, and Aston Martin is slipping.
That's true. I mean, I'm always the eternal hopeful, and I was doing the math today, and I was like, huh, it's under 100 points now. It's 78. Look at that. That's a chunk. That's a chunk play. Now we need some more of it. And, you know, the thing with the McLarens are, you know, now we're finally seeing the final update, that third level of update that's supposed to come through. And that was specifically to address the one bugaboo in this car, which is the slow speed corners. And here, Singapore had a ton of them, and they went fairly well here. So on a track that normally in a previous spec would have not gone well for them at all. You know, this was hot, muggy, sticky conditions and slow speed corners. Bahrain all over again. But here, Lando comes home in P2. So, excited for tracks that I know will suit them better. We're going to see one next week. Suzuka, I think, will suit them very well. And if they can get on top of the upgrades and do all the correlation work that they're going to have to do now on the Piastri side, they did it on Lando's side this week. We'll have to see what can happen. So you never know. One more, bogey track for Red Bull, and maybe we're talking about a McLaren victory here. But, still a little ways to go. But good showing for them this weekend for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Enough of our takes on the weekend. We now will turn it over to have your say on what you saw this weekend, the fan email segment. Cody, it is your time to shine with this. So here we go.
All right. Our first fan email, as usual. A frequent emailer. Thank you again, Rachel Fleming. And she says, Thanos is defeated. What a race. Brilliant action towards the end, and there was tension throughout because you didn't know how it was going to play out. Carlos deserves it, especially with how well he's been driving recently. But the old guard of Fernando and Sergio had a shocker. How many mistakes did they both make? Both were very poor in the race, and their teams did them no favors. And finally, what a result for Liam Lawson. If this was his final race of the season, he goes out on such a high. This will make Yuki and Danny Ric very worried indeed. Now normal service will resume in Japan. I definitely agree with that last point. I think that they're going to go right back to Red Bull domination next week and probably for the rest of the season. But like I said, for one little blip, we had it go just right.
Well, and, everybody wants to point to, this was the first race with Technical Directive 45, and, oh my God, that means that Red Bull were cheating all along, and now they've been caught. According to everybody who's been talked to about this that's an expert, that Technical Directive had nothing to do with Red Bull being off here. I think this was just the bogey track in their setup. Look, what I love about Formula One is, in order to go 23 for 23, you have to be so good in so many different environments. And that's why I kept saying how ludicrous that it was getting, that this was even becoming a conversation. But this is why, because you can't set up your car perfectly for every track. And at least tells me that they're human beings still running Red Bull and not the stockfish machines that, sometimes we accuse them of being. But But anyway, to Rachel's point, I mean, she was on it from the beginning all weekend. Great comments. We appreciate all of them. We love interacting with you. I can't agree with it. Pretty much agree with everything. I mean, the thing we didn't talk about with Fernando and in the start of his very bad day was the pit stop. He tried to take advantage, a la Mercedes, of that virtual safety car. They tried to put him on a set of used softs, and it was a 25-second pit stop. That's like when we laugh at Ferrari, it's kind of, that's what we laugh at type of pit stop. So yeah, not a good day for the Aston Martin folks. And yeah, Sergio Perez, his, bad weekend kind of continued. He was the one running afoul of all the post-race investigations, but somehow again, even though they gave him, I think he did get a penalty, but I don't think it mattered. He does keep P8 on the day. And like I said, I think the best thing for him is he's just happy to be out of Singapore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Fernando pit stop, I guess it looked like they had to redesign their jack to accommodate some new bodywork that they had at the rear of the car. And maybe there's some kind of issue there, because it looked like the car slipped off the jack before the tire change was complete, and they had to re-get the car back up on that jack, and that cost them so much time. And, you know, Aston Martin cars were also weren't performing very well this weekend to begin with, so that just made it go from bad to worse.
Yep. Interesting that, you know, the conspiracy theory was that the Aston Martins were copying the Red Bulls, and here Red Bull doesn't go well, and now Aston Martin doesn't go well. Interesting. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say on that.
Yes. Our next email comes from another frequent contributor to our show, The Formula, and they say, "That was awesome. This is what happens when Ferrari only halfway screws up as opposed to having a full-blown weekly implosion. Leclerc got a bit hosed, but overall very happy for Ferrari and the Tifosi. Really tough to see K-Mag come home with P10 after having such a strong qualifying. I really hope Haas figures out how to compete at the top in the next couple of years." Probably been saying that forever since they started. Even with Logan in the sport, USA is not getting a big enough share of the F1 limelight yet. I've been hoping since Haas is the only U.S. represented team that they would have gotten on top of things many years ago. They seem to, no matter what, be pretty much hanging out at the back. And it's kind of like every year you're kind of like, maybe this is the year. And they come out screaming in the first couple races, and then it all goes to shit from there.
Well, and part of it is, for so many years, they've been operating on really, really a shoestring budget. And, mm-hmm. and to them, spending up to the cost cap is their challenge. You know, can mm-hmm. they actually spend up to where the cost cap is? Now they're able to do that. And I think they did announce that, believe it or not, for the Austin race, they're bringing a set of upgrade packages through, really? Which means that they're pivoting to a new and maybe interesting, innovative concept that's going to try to set them up for 2024. So usually by the time they get to Austin, these upgrades have been done, dusted, and everybody's just kind of playing with what they have. You don't see a whole lot of correlation work going on when they come to Austin, but we're going to see it with Haas. Supposedly a very significant upgrade package. They mentioned it on the broadcast a number of times throughout the course of the weekend. So we will have to kind of wait and see if that solves the race pace problem. We all know what the problem is. They can qualify. They can sometimes qualify pretty well. But that thing just, it lights up its tires, which makes it a great qualifying car, but it also eats its tires, which means by the end of the race, they're dead in the water.
Mm-hmm. As far as the comment about Ferrari only halfway screwing up, I think I'm going to probably disagree a little bit with that one this week, because I'm guessing that's in reference to the Leclerc being kind of hosed. But I don't think that that was a Ferrari screw up. I think that was the Ferrari plan was to hose Leclerc a little bit for the sake of securing that Sainz victory. And like you had said earlier on, Leclerc could have still been on for a podium had it not been for that second round of pit stops from the virtual safety car. So more a little bit of bad luck for him specifically out of the weekend. But I think Ferrari pretty much had everything go their way this time.
Yeah, the second they opted, or whoever's idea it was, and I was told, or I've heard that it was Leclerc's, to put him on the soft tire early was pretty much, he was sacrificing the win. There's no way you're going to be able to make a set of soft tires in those conditions, no matter how well you try to manage them, go as long as a set of medium tires. It's just not going to happen. It's the softness of the soft compounds. It's not designed to. Had they pulled it off, I would have said, whatever the heck Ferrari is doing with their tires, the FIA better start freaking looking at it, because something's not right about that right there. But yeah, that was strategic. That was intended. That was planned. He was always going to be the rear gunner. The difference is we have not ever seen Ferrari for a very long time be unified in the theory of, well, this is our best shot for a win, and we're going to do everything that's necessary to actually see it through from beginning, middle to end. So whatever rivalry may be going on within the Ferrari garage between Leclerc and Sainz, if there even is one, either the order came down from on high to stow it for this weekend, or they just decided to. But whatever the reason was, Leclerc's fate was an intended fate. Let's be real about what that was. That was not a throwaway. That was intentional.
Mm-hmm. Our next fan email comes from another frequent contributor to the show. Thank you, Dave Doherty. And he says, that was a fantastic race. At last, we have a race that doesn't have the usual Red Bull dominance. And some interesting stuff. Well done to Ferrari. That win was needed. It was definitely needed. It was not the team that I thought was going to be the Red Bull toppler. I thought that was going to go to Mercedes or McLaren, honestly. But very happy to see them have an on weekend. I'm not sure, you know, with the hat I'm wearing, I'm not really sure I feel great about Red Bull totally binning it this weekend. I am still a fan. And I am one of the people that was rooting for Max Verstappen's win streak to go on for a lot longer. I did think that this was going to be potentially the race that would do him in. I figured if he got through this race with the win, that it probably would have continued on until Brazil, which also seems to be a race that Red Bull has struggled at a little bit lately. Singapore in particular seems to be kind of an Achilles heel for Max Verstappen. It's one of the few races on the current calendar that he hasn't won a race at. It went to Sergio Perez last year, but neither one of them was really ever going to be competitive in this particular race. So yeah, nice to see things get switched up a little bit. Instead of it being a season that breaks all the records, it's only going to be a season where they break most of the records. I think that's going to be good enough for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you've got a whole lot to complain about. what was I going to say? The stat. You want to talk about an interesting stat, and I saw this as a meme, and, you know, social media is what it is. People like to jump on people when they're down. You don't go there to make yourself feel better when your team has a bad day. But Max Verstappen in his career has led 3 laps across the Singapore Grand Prix in his career. Antonio Giovinazzi has led 4.
That is a bit of an out there one.
So
I applaud whoever like goes and finds these.
Well, Virtual Statman Sean Kelly's a great resource, and sometimes just, you know, people making memes up. But saw that one, and I was like, huh, I guess that's real. That's right. They did have a Sauber leading in Singapore for 3 or 4 laps, and there it was.
I got to wonder if in Max's quest to collect them all, that is to say, collect a P1 trophy from every track, I got to wonder if he's going to go back to the racing sim and just play Singapore like over and over and over and over again leading up to next year's race.
Yeah, it could be one of those like next year he's up by 50 seconds and there's no tire management for us. We've solved it. We just, you know, we took Adrian Newey, we took him off the main project because we figured he'd done enough there, and we just had him work on this. That's what he's going to do. Yeah, just Singapore. Just figure that out. Yikes. Anyway, next email a guy who interacts with us a lot. Doesn't really say a whole lot at all necessarily to us, but Wes Poehler. I like this comment. Lawson needs to keep his seat for the rest of the season. I have a theory about – yeah, it's spicy. I have a theory about what we may end up seeing. I don't know if it'll be this season. Cody, I'll let you react, and then I'll go.
Well, I got to wonder if – me and you are thinking on the same page here, because I have to agree with what I've heard from a bunch of other talking heads on the matter. And it is that Lawson could very well be a full-time driver at AlphaTauri next year, but I don't think it's going to be Daniel Ricciardo that loses his newfound seat unless he comes back and does terribly for the rest of the season. I think Yuki Tsunoda is probably more likely to lose the seat because Daniel Ricciardo, despite having some issues with performance over the past couple seasons where he was racing with McLaren, he did start out at Red Bull. He was a part of that team, and he had great success with Red Bull. Even outperforming Max Verstappen in the earlier years there, had plenty of wins to his name, outperformed, reigning champion Sebastian Vettel in 2014 when the cars changed, got a few wins there that season. He's a proven talent. And on top of that, he is extremely popular with fans. So he also brings that popularity and acclaim to Red Bull by racing for AlphaTauri, just because, people like him. It's going to help them with the popularity. It's going to help them sell merch. It's going to help them in interviews. It's going to get them that extra attention. Yuki Tsunoda has had a bunch of seasons to prove himself. And to be fair, he is performing much better this season than he has over the past years. But I just don't think he's shown enough in that time with AlphaTauri to really ever warrant moving up to the Red Bull seat, which has got to be what they're thinking about. Perez isn't going to race there forever. He's getting up there in years. Who knows if he wants to keep racing, by the time this next contract is up, which is not a very long contract. And they got to be looking for that next driver. And I don't think it's going to be Yuki Tsunoda. And I think they got to probably see the writing on the wall at some point that they need to try something else.
Yeah. There goes my theory, because I'm with you.
No,
that's good. Because I think you said it pretty much perfectly. And you make a great point about Daniel Ricciardo being a spoonful of sugar with a team with a lot of vinegary elements to it. I think that is a great point and something that he's able to bring to the table that not anybody in the Red Bull camp, whether it's a young driver, whether it's Yuki Tsunoda, or whether it was, whoever else you want to put there, can't bring that element in to Red Bull like Daniel Ricciardo can. And it's a team that I think is going to need that, particularly given how they've kind of acted over the course of the last few weeks, how they've acted over the course of the last couple of years. There's a lot of elements that are kind of hard to like. And Danny Ric is not part of that. The fans have done a great job of kind of setting him apart from the rest of that while still being an integral part of that team. So, yeah, that's a great point about what you said about that.
Go ahead.
I do think you're going to see the heat under the two seats that right now have the most heat on them for sure at this point of the championship are Yuki Tsunoda's and Logan Sargeant's. And I do think that, especially if AlphaTauri do the MotoGP prior spec car and they get effectively an RB19 that they get to play with next year, even if it's a half a second off the pace, because everybody else evolves, that's still really good. That still gives Danny Ric a shot at good points throughout most of that championship. Mm-hmm. And then if they can try to develop it, you're even better off. So, you start to see kind of the gears turning and stuff starts to make sense now that you didn't. When it happened, we were all kind of like, why would he do that? Now it makes a whole lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we will... Thank you to everybody for contributing. Thank you to Dave Doherty, who's been all over social media with us. The Formula, who's always fun to talk to. Rachel Fleming, who, like I said, if she wanted to be an F1 commentator, I think all she had to do is turn a mic on. I think she's great. I love the points. They're always to the point, salient, and easy to react to. So thank you to everybody for interacting with us this weekend. All right, so we will now hop into our awards, and we will start with the weekly rubbish. What do we want to put in the bin? Cody, where's yours?
I had a little bit of a hard time picking this one because I wasn't sure whether I wanted to put Red Bull for rubbish or analysis paralysis. I ended up going with Alpine reliability for rubbish because it seems to be what continues to do them in throughout this season. Generally, it seems like this season, reliability has been very strong across pretty much all of the teams. And Alpine seems to be the one car in the midfield that could score good points, probably week in, week out. You know, they have the oddball track just like anyone else where they're really off the pace. But generally, they've been performing well in terms of speed and qualifying and race pace. But the reliability is just killing them this year. And we saw it again today where Pierre Gasly kind of had a quiet race, ended up coming home in sixth place. Great points. Ocon was making good moves, probably would have been on track to get some points as well, and just hit a curb and something happened to the car and it was done. So I think that's the big thing that they got to figure out going forward is how do they keep that car in good shape throughout an entire race?
Yeah, good point. We haven't seen a lot of engines go poof, and we've seen, I think, more Alpines than probably anybody else this season do that. And, you know, the car literally looked cooked on the side of the road. You literally saw smoke coming from every brake duct and everything else. So that car was done, and clearly so. But my rubbish will go out to the three stewards at the FIA who couldn't, in their infinite wisdom, give Max Verstappen a penalty despite not one, not two, but three separate attempts at it. God, I wanted to be in that room. Those must have been some really compelling arguments. And that team communication had to have been really poor and really explainable. One, maybe two, I could see going by the board, reprimand, okay. But all three, come on, man. Come on, something not right about that.
Andy giving the rubbish award to the FIA? No, yeah, really. I haven't seen that one before.
Yeah, I know. Well, I had to save the I could have put Red Bull here. I'm putting him in the next one. But I think you and I are actually going to be on the same page. Interesting to see where this goes. Analysis paralysis, what you got?
I just probably like you're leading into. I've got Red Bull for analysis paralysis. Whatever it was, they couldn't figure it out for this track. The car setup was not there. This wasn't like a Red Bull was within a shot and it just didn't quite go their way, or they were just a little outperformed. They were completely outclassed to this race, nowhere in qualifying. Race strategy didn't work out in their favor. I think it was potentially a decent strategy, you know, for what they were working with, but just, you know, the way it went with safety cars and virtual safety cars, it didn't work out for them. And they didn't really have the pace to make that strategy work anyway, as far as like if a safety car came out. So, yeah, they need to go back to the drawing board with Singapore next year. But I don't think it's going to carry over much beyond this track. I think probably for the rest of the year, they're pretty well suited to be on that winning streak again. But yeah, for this particular one, they didn't seem to find a solution.
All right. So we're going to agree on the recipient, but we're going to have some very different reasons why. So this is going to be kind of interesting. So mine will go out to Red Bull as well. And here's why. The game that they played, again, I wanted to be in that FIA stewards room to hear whatever those arguments, but the thing that really pissed me off about that was that they told Yuki Tsunoda's representative, don't bother showing up. That's the type of crap when Schumacher was dominating that Ferrari used to pull that used to drive me nuts when I was much younger. I hated that stuff. It's one of the reasons I'm probably not a better or bigger supporter of Ferrari, because they used to play games like this. They used to wield their power like almost like the madmen and just try to get away with whatever they could. And most of the time they get away with it. And again, I'm not the conspiracy theorist, but here's the thing. And in my old life, a long time ago, I used to actually be a chess person. And I hadn't been for a long time, and I'm just kind of starting to get back into it. And one of my favorite YouTubers is a guy by the name of Gotham Chess. So go check him out. He's funny as hell, by the way. So he does these things, and he's critiquing these young, you know, inexperienced players' games. And his favorite saying is like, what are you playing? Here's the thing that I don't understand about why are Red Bull pulling the ultimate gambit game here, where they're telling Yuki Tsunoda's representative, no, 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 never bother. Why are you wielding your power to try to win a battle that gets you nothing? Did three grid positions on the grid mean that much to you? Are you that fucking petty? That you're going to do that. You're going to play your queen. You're going to bring your biggest thing out. You do this if it's the last race of the season and you need a favor to try to get your guy across the line when it's money and a championship on the line. You don't pull this shit here for this. Dude, what, brah, what chess are you playing? You look like complete Tom fools because of this. And it got you nothing. It got you absolutely nothing. And now we've all seen. And you just also told the rest of the grid how you're going to play it when things get tight. You showed your ass this weekend, Red Bull. Piss on that and shame on you.
I can feel the heat coming off of that one.
Oh,
I
didn't know
you're going to be so passionate about that.
Oh, it just drives me crazy. Like, you didn't need to do that. If the stewards are going to come down and they're going to give him a pass on that, fine. But at least let Franz Tost or somebody be in the room to make the other argument. Ridiculous.
It does seem ridiculous. And I didn't even know about the thing about Red Bull having a hand in Yuki Tsunoda's representative not showing up. Makes sense, more sense now why they didn't get the penalty.
It's not known, but I mean, come on. I mean, I'm connecting dots here, but come on.
Fair enough. The dots are there.
And
it does seem kind of pointless if they're playing games like that. It seems pointless at this time because, look, you're having a bad weekend. It's probably not going to go your way. You already won all the other fucking races this year.
Exactly. So
it's not going to make a big difference. He gets the penalty, let it happen, and tell him to, maybe don't impede other drivers next time. I don't know.
Concept. What a concept. Wow. But anyway, go check Gotham Chess out. He's a lot of fun. And he didn't pay us. He did not pay us. He's got enough following. He didn't pay us or do anything. That's just me because he helps me fall asleep sometimes at night when I can't fall asleep anymore. Anyway, we'll move on to the Dark Horse of the Day. Let's talk about something more fun, the Dark Horse Award. So, Cody, who was your surprise to the good on the day?
Liam Lawson, for sure. I was so excited. I was like pretty much like on the edge of my seat when he came through and beat Max Verstappen in qualifying at the perfect time to knock Max out of Q3. Did not see that coming at all. So props to him for beating Max while driving an AlphaTauri in what, his second F1 race.
Third.
He's got very little experience. I mean, I think he's their test driver, right? But very little experience in the car. And he came out and proved himself this weekend. Also scored his first points during the race. Just seems to have a really good hold on things, a pretty mature approach, making the very best of the opportunity that's fallen into his lap here with Daniel Ricciardo sitting out on the sidelines while his hands heal. Just very impressed with him. I don't think anyone saw him performing to this level when he came in as the sub, but I think we're getting to the point here where we can call him the new super sub.
Well, or this is just a talented guy who's just finally getting a chance to show it on this stage. He was on his way to winning the Super Formula Championship. So that was going to happen regardless. So this is a guy who's been highly rated. He's highly rated for a reason. All these guys who you keep hearing, Oscar Piastri, Liam Lawson, a lot of these guys from, down under in New Zealand, they're highly rated because there's a lot of talent there. And sometimes you just have to kind of dig a little bit, particularly like when it's snowing out here and there's that thing that goes on in New Zealand. Pay attention to that. That's where you're going to find the next ones. Liam Lawson won this thing. Piastri won this thing. Lando Norris won that. Lance Stroll won it a few years ago, too. So the next ones always seem to come out of that group. So yeah, definitely pay attention to, I think it's now called the Frick F4 Oceana series. It used to be the Toyota Racing Series. I used to just call it TRS. Yeah, so I'm with you. I have Liam Lawson as an honorable mention. Also honorable mention to K-Mag, but I'm going to give it to the man who just the biggest mover on the day, Oscar Piastri, who kind of got some bad luck, or, you know, goes out in Q1, didn't have the upgraded fully McLaren car, and just methodically, slowly but surely got there and scored a bag of points on the day for the MCL boys. Made me a very happy fan today. So thank you, Oscar. All right, driver of the day. I think this one's going to be pretty easy. Cody, what you got?
Yeah, this one's a no-brainer for me. Driver of the day is Carlos Sainz. Masterfully done. Despite having cars right on his butt for, you know, a significant portion of the race, or even maybe all of the race, now that I'm thinking about it, never faltered, never had a slip up, you know, managed the tires, managed the race, managed Lando Norris's DRS distance, everything he did extremely well today. And yeah, I don't think anyone else deserved the victory as much as he did. And he brought it home for Ferrari. So tip of the cap to you, Sainz. Did an excellent job.
Yeah, ditto to that. Carlos, the smooth operator, Sainz. This was the guy, when he was with McLaren, I always thought he could be this. It was very much untapped potential, even when he was with McLaren. Yeah, I mean, find the fault in what he did all weekend. I dare you to. I don't think you're going to find it. His first win was kind of lots of fumbling and kind of got it handed to him. This one, he went out, took it. It was there. He saw the opportunity. He was the best of the two Ferrari drivers, so he got the preferential strategy. And they just went out and grabbed it and didn't let it go. And that's hard to do, especially at a track like this one. So Carlos, smooth operator, sign, sir, tip of my cap as well, driver of the day.
Man, he was good like the whole weekend too, because I think, let's see here, he got pole. I think he led every lap of the race, didn't he?
Yes, I think so. The only thing he didn't get was fastest lap. The only thing he didn't get,
that was the only thing.
Yeah.
Even topped, I think, at least one of the practice sessions. So yeah, just fantastic weekend overall.
Yep, definitely. All right, so now we come to the part of the program that I always dread, and that would be the prediction results. I had my one-off weekend last weekend, and then I guess we're back to normal service resumed. It was close fight. Of equal, I think, incompetence on both our parts, especially with respect to the lap times, which I'm watching it in FP1 and I'm going, we're 4 seconds off and it's free practice one. This is going to be bad. And it was. But you finished, sir, with 3 points on the day. You got the P3 podium. Normally when it's the podium, we're always talking about P1 podium. Nope, you got the P3 on the podium. You got the race fastest time. And you, sir, did get the prop bet because we finished on time. We did not see the race clock ever appear. You were 14 minutes to the good on that. So you win the prop bet. I got 2 points. I did get the quali lap time just because I was a little bit faster and the times were ridiculously quicker. And I got Lando Norris on the podium. So then my homer pick came through, but that was about all I could say for my predictions. So I'm just happy to be done with Singapore, and I guess I'll try again next week. So back to normal form in the predictions.
Yep. You had it, too, right up until the very end. You had at least a tie in your hand until the second half of the last lap when George Russell binned it, because that gave me the P3 podium. It just got it by that much.
Yeah, well, congrats, sir, and well played. And yes, as always. All right, so I guess that's the end of what we wanted to talk about. We will basically have to turn around and re-rack real quickly because we are right back at it next week. I'm calling it. We're going to Cody's now second homeland, considering he spent about that much time there. We're going to the land of the rising sun, at least in terms of F1. That's where they're going. We're going to the Japanese Grand Prix. That is up next. If you liked this race being early, it's the opposite problem. You have to either stay up late or power nap to try to figure out how to watch this next one live. So I'm going to have to figure out exactly what my strategy is, but it will be interesting because Thursday evening will be prime time practice. I think there's practice at like 7-8 o'clock at night. Is usually kind of how that goes. The first practice is always usually right in the middle of prime time. So if you want to get a chance to watch some practices you don't know necessarily always get a chance to do, I know FP1's kind of early for us in the U.S. You may get a chance to do that this week, this upcoming weekend. So we will be back. It'll be Cody and I on hopefully Wednesday night to take care of the preview, get all of it set up. We'll recap the news and whatever else happened between today and when we record. And then we'll try to be back again next Sunday night for the Japanese leg of the championship, Japanese Grand Prix. Cody, any final thoughts before we hop on out for the night?
Just that I thought that the Singapore Grand Prix really delivered on the excitement factor this year. Great to see someone else get the win this year for a change. And also very excited for the Japanese Grand Prix. I'm a bit of a Japanophile. This is on my list of races to see someday in person, if I can make it happen. I think the Suzuka track is really cool, really fast. Looks like it's really fun to go around as a driver, even if maybe it doesn't always produce the most exciting races. This one's one of my favorites, and looking forward very much to trying to stay up late instead of trying to get up really early, because it works out better for me.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know. Sometimes the early ones just suit me a little bit better, but I will come up with a plan where there may be a power napping or two in order to make the sessions, but I will do my darndest to do that. Yeah, we'll be back next weekend. So for Cody, for everybody connected to the show, it's always fun to do. I'm glad we had a fun race. I'm glad we had the race strategy. It was so much fun to get into all this tonight. So we will be back on Wednesday. We will re-rack. We'll do it again. And as always, folks, take care and may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast, or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.